You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm talking with Conchetta Stewart, a leader in academia. She's the Dean of the College of Communication at Temple University, and a personal friend. So, Conchetta, thanks again for chatting with us tonight.
Oh, I'm having a good time, Andy. Thanks.
So, the 11th piece of advice, and we skipped over a couple because they are somewhat redundant, comes from Thelma Golden. She's the director and the chief curator at the Studio Museum in Harlem. And she makes an interesting point. She said, she actually has two points here we're going to discuss. But the first one is, this is my paraphrase, that you need a circle of support. If you don't have a personal team to help you achieve your personal goals, go out and create one. Now, she didn't actually say personal. She talked about a team. But I really think when she talked about a support circle, she wasn't talking in her corporate responsibility, make sure you've got employees helping you achieve your goals. I think she was talking about career goals. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about
that. Well, absolutely. I'd say on a couple of levels. One is certainly the mentor. You need to have someone who has experienced a bit more than you have to help you make your plans for your future. But one thing I've also learned is it's important to have people outside your organization, well outside your organization, that you can talk to when you have an issue that you need some help with. You want to be able to call on people who don't know the players, don't have a personal interest in the situation, and can really give you objective advice about how to handle the situation. So I think that they become really useful tools and resources to you as you move along through your career and through your individual jobs.
That makes sense to me. And, you know, I took a personal development course a few years ago, and it was exactly about managing a team. It was the goal, the job in this course, which lasted 9 months, was to create a project. And there were only two rules in the project. It had to be big enough that it scared you, and it had to be something that you didn't already know how to do.
That's great.
And my instructions were to create a team around this. And it didn't have to be a formal team like employees that worked for you. It could be people who would devote 20 minutes in the course of the whole project giving you advice. It could be one subject matter expert. It could be somebody that's going to be a personal coach and coach you every week. Have a once a week conference call to find out if you did what you said you were going to do last week and to walk you through your plan of what you were going to do this week. But what I learned from that was that any size project can have a team. You know, we tend to think of things like losing weight or going on a diet or getting in shape as, well, that's something you do by yourself, of course. And what I learned from this course is no, you put together a team for that. You might have a personal trainer, you might have an exercise buddy, you might have a nutritionist, or you might just have somebody you check in with and say, I did what I said I was going to do this week, or I didn't do it, and I recommit to doing it next week. But that was an eye-opener to me that a team was appropriate for these things that I used to think of as very personal, individual goals.
And I really resonated with what you said early on about when you take on projects that are you haven't done before and is frighten you a little bit. First of all, if you are in a position of leadership, you're going to typically get offered those kinds of
right.
opportunities. And it can be daunting when you think that you've got to do it by yourself, but once you realize that you have people at your disposal who are vested in your success. That's the other thing that I think is helpful about building these kinds of connections along the way, because you help them out as well. So it's really a great way to ensure your success as you move through your career and through your life.
Well, that makes sense to me. I'm thinking of a couple of things here. One is the mentor and the mentee relationship. Another is the professor and the student. You know, when I first was teaching, I thought that mostly I was imparting information to the students. You know, I've got the information. They don't have it. Let me give it to them. And then I ran into a professor that said, you know, I learn stuff from my students every week. And I was like, really? Well, you must have smarter students than I do, because I'm not learning from my students every week. And then I discovered I wasn't listening to my students.
And they bring a lot to the table as well.
Yeah, everybody brings a lot to the table. So even when you're the mentor and there's a mentee, any mentor will tell you that they've learned in that situation. That makes sense to me.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, let's move on to the second piece of advice that we got from Thelma Golden, and that was, don't dismiss your critics. Even if you go in a different direction, these are my words now, she did not say this exactly, even if you decide to go in a different direction from what your critics recommend, acknowledge them and acknowledge the validity of their viewpoints, and that simply you've made a different decision. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, some of the most effective teams I've led and projects I've accomplished have been when I've taken someone who's been on the outside of the group, you know, making pot shots, and just brought that energy into the team. And typically, they have good ideas. They just, for whatever reason, aren't on board early on. And if you bring them into the process, it's great energy.
Well, I think there may be a couple of things there. The first is that this is someone who may disagree with the initial decision or what they see as the overall decision, and so they kind of work against it.
Right, or they may be an outsider because organizationally they aren't considered key to the process. And that's something that can certainly make somebody feel negative about a project.
But they're key enough that they're bad-mouthing it, yes, or am I missing something?
Well, maybe and maybe not. But the point is, they can certainly be damaging and certainly can get in your way.
Yes. One of the other lessons of life I've gotten, and I know I've talked to you about this before, is about gossip. This says, don't dismiss your critics. You know, so many times, if you look at the division in politics in this country, the left versus the right, the extremes, you know, the 20%ers on each side, they absolutely dismiss their critics. The other side knows nothing, it's worthless, and they're so far off base it's not even worth having a conversation with them. Well, that's wasted energy, because when one side comes to power, they've dismissed everybody else. And again, one of the things I like about you as a leader, I still remember when you took over the group I was in at AT&T, and we had been peers, and so you talked with me quite a bit about it, about your what you were doing. And we came to one of the names on our team, and I was just so down on him because he hadn't been doing much work. And I said, oh, you've got to be kidding me. He's worthless. And you said, no, I know exactly I won't go into the details, but you said, I know exactly what kind of job this person can handle. You assign that person that work, and I'm willing to write somebody off. And you're like, no, they just have to find their niche.
Well, that goes back to what my boss said to me when I was a young woman in the business world. Nobody wakes up wanting to be a failure, right?
I thought this guy did, see? but so back to don't dismiss your critics. One of the things that happens, there's going to be criticism of any decision you make. And if you do write it off or try and suppress it, human nature being what it is, you aren't going to get them to shut up. And so what happens is, you can dominate them in the meeting, but they leave the meeting, and then they start bad-mouthing the plan.
Right.
And this was a huge revelation to me when I learned the destructive nature of gossip. And it was explained to me that gossip is talking about someone who's not present. And somebody might say, well, you might say good things about the person. Well, you might, but most of us that talk about other people behind their backs talk in negative terms. And so I've seen this many times. People don't speak up in a meeting. They come out and they say, well, I don't agree with that decision. You know, they're thinking they're going to sell more of this product than they plan, or they're going to develop this or that strategy, and it's never going to work. Well, the negative energy is already undermining the project.
Well, not only that, you're allowing your critics to frame the discussion.
Outside the meeting.
Even inside the meeting, by not addressing the issues that they raise in a serious, respectful way.
Uh-huh.
And then you become defensive. And so that's a terrible place to be. And I hate to admit it, but I've made that mistake in my day by basically ignoring what I thought was a silly argument. And it takes on a larger-than-life kind of quality, and that's your mistake to let it get that far. So I think it's really wise to head it off.
Well, plus, if the person, and my point about gossip outside the meeting or outside the general conversation in the one-on-one conversations is that if you address them directly, and it's not like, let me explain to you why you're an idiot. It's more like, well, I understand what you're saying, and that would be a way to go if we wanted to develop that product. But we have limits here, and we have to make a decision between X and Y, and I'm going with Y for the following reasons. Now, we could make a case for X. If you're just that tolerant, the person leaves feeling, okay, well, they understand that there's merit to my idea. You can then ask them to sign up and say, look, I know that you want X, but can I talk you into signing up for Y?
Right.
And more often than not, as you know better than me, person will say, we'll do Y. You know, now you've got somebody on your side as opposed to somebody that leaves saying, oh, we should have done X.
Exactly. And it's usually never that simple, right, that there's one answer to a particular problem. And so I think you're right, to bring them into the circle.
That's right. You acknowledge the complexity that we could have gone a different direction, but ultimately, what's left implicit is, I'm the boss, I'm responsible for this, and we're going over here. will you join me?
Another way I look at this, too, from my Quaker background, that we will have disagreements. They're a natural part of human discourse. We allow people to have ample time to have their side of the issue heard, and then we come to a point where we acknowledge the best way to move forward, and that person will, as we say, stand aside for the good of the group. But you need to create a kind of environment where people realize that that's what they have to do, that they have to stand aside.
Right. Well, in a way, it's, you really want more than stand aside, don't you? As a leader, you want them to join you in the task at hand.
Oh, absolutely. But on a particular issue, they need to let it go.
I get it.
And move on. Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Everyone has to be a productive member of the team.
That makes perfect sense to me. Well, Conchetta, I want to thank you for talking with us tonight about leadership and for sharing your insights about these lessons in life that others have offered about leadership.
This was really enjoyable. Thank you.
And the Andy Finn Show will be back after this.